Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Design can help good engineering, but does design, good design, lead to more innovation? Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is April 24th, 2013. We're on day three of our design article. You can find it on pages 34, 35, and 36 in your Advanced magazine. Good design is good business, and it's really an interesting topic to try and explain and understand the connection between engineering good products, designing them to be attractive and easily usable for consumers, but then also how does this tie in with innovating and the future. It's a lot more complicated than maybe what you might realize. It's more than just making a product a pretty color or something that looks kind of nice. There's all sorts of concepts that go into this and a lot of work and effort. And speaking of work and effort, I've got two people here who have put a lot of work and effort into our first 2 days, Naomi Beeshevel and Josh Mooney. Hi, panelists.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
My hardworking panelists. Glad you came back. Now, Naomi, yesterday we were talking about the designers building better solutions and also commoditization, pushing designers to the front.
That's true. Now, I think one of the misconceptions about design is exactly what you were just saying, that it's really just about, oh, which color is prettier? But when you understand a little more about design and as you consider the ramifications of good design, the results of good design, the things that happen as a result of the choices a designer makes, you start to notice that some things that seem like they don't really matter actually have a great effect on how a product is used and how it's appreciated. I think of just the basic example of layouts of something like a magazine. We're not just thinking, okay, which picture looks pretty? We're thinking, okay, does this really illustrate what the text is saying? Does this font make it too hard for our readers to understand what's being said? You know, so it's not just about looks. It's also about usability.
I'm going to ask you something completely different, Josh. We're talking about designing and engineering, actually really design for products here. What about your life, your home, and having good design in those things?
I think that is something that men, women, families of all sizes are putting a lot of time and effort thinking about these days in terms of how their space, whether it's small in a studio apartment or in big in a large house, how things are laid out and how they can make the best use of their life through design.
Yeah.
I personally have trusted that task to my incredibly talented wife, and she has done a fantastic job with our home.
Well, there are a lot of things that are included in that. I think of the design of your house, how it is laid out, just everything about it. Is it designed properly, not only for functionality, but also for livability? Do you like the place? Are you comfortable with it? For instance, I think of Naomi's office. It's a lovely office.
Thank you. It's intentional.
That's why I mention it, because you really put an effort into it to make it a certain way. It's clutter-free.
It is.
And there are certain touches about it that make it very comfy and cozy.
Flowers.
You've got other things in there, too. But there's a certain way to it.
And actually, Bill, it carries over into my work organization as well. I have color-coded calendars. Mm. I have colorful Post-it notes for my to-do lists. I have a pretty little schedule that I write all of my, you know, appointments down on. I have deadlines and schedules that I color-code, and all of those things help me to stay more motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely noticed a change from before I started doing this and after. And I shared that advice with my sister, actually, recently. She said, oh, I feel so overwhelmed by my job. I said, you know, take an hour and organize your stuff, color code it, make it look pretty, make it look, you know, a way you like, and then try again. And she just told me the other week, it made such a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, put some thought into it. Take some time out, put some thought into it. And not only the physical nature of things, but think about also the design of your life,
right? Mm-hmm.
Your schedule, right?
Yeah.
Instead of running around like a chicken with your head cut off and wondering why you're not making any progress, take some time out and design your life.
Right.
Design your schedule.
And one of the companies we talked about yesterday has helped me a great deal do that is Google Calendar.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's laid out very well. There's a lot of great functionality that I use to make the best use of my time.
Okay. Well, Josh mentions Google Calendar, and actually, we left off yesterday with our sidebar. If you look at the top of page 35, the upper right portion, we had already covered points number one and two, Apple and Google, and so that's a great point for us, great place for us to pick up. So let me have Josh read number three.
Twitter, what began as a simple experiment in hyperfast information sharing, is now info overload to the 10th power. Twitter is already both newsfeed and water cooler for many folks, but to keep growing, its design must evolve from an exhausting experience to one of smarter filtering and organization. In short, Twitter needs more user experience wizards.
Ooh. So, what does this mean? Well, originally, the idea with Twitter, it was a simple experiment in hyper-fast information sharing. So, in other words, instant news updates, instant information updates from friends or celebrities or anyone. Now, it can feel overwhelming, and I would agree with that. You know, you log on and you've got, 18 posts in the last 30 seconds, and you think, my goodness, what? I can't even make sense of it all. Mm-hmm. And so, they say here, well, maybe it needs more user experience wizards, which just means people who are almost magical in their ability to organize and control user experience.
Okay. I know you were signed up on Twitter and had used it, but not real active.
I'm not very active. I enjoy logging on now and then, but I agree with the idea that it can be a little overwhelming.
Right.
And Twitter has made changes over the past couple of years that allow you to organize your feed a little better. More clearly. So, of course, they are working on this. But I agree that it can be a little much.
Okay. And I know, Josh, you had used it in America. Twitter is much more popular, much more widely used in America. How was your experience?
I am following certain thought leaders in different categories that are publishing tweets on, business and technology. But I don't use it as a social tool. I see the status update in Facebook being a much more usable tool for what's going on in my friends' lives. And Twitter, I see it more as a tool that keeps me in the know in certain business topics.
Right. I think what they're saying here about it has to be it has to use smarter filtering and organization. To me, this is why in an earlier day we actually mentioned Pinterest, because that's an example of a similar setup where they give you options for filtering your information. It's easy to search. It's easy to only look at posts on a certain topic, things like that. In Twitter, they've developed that side of it a little less so far. And maybe they have their reasons, but this writer is arguing that that makes it kind of impractical.
Okay. Well, interesting sidebar right there. It covers three, very well-known companies, big, popular companies, but also firms that they face challenges just like every other business and just like any business unless they address certain design challenges adequately in the future. 20, 30 years from now, they could be nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody. I think of, for instance, Nokia. Leader in phones, in mobile phones. 7-8 years ago, they had 70% of the market. Now, they've got about 2%. So, the same thing could happen to any of these companies if they don't stay up on top of this and make the changes necessary. Well, let's get into our reading for today, and we're going to break it down into two separate readings. We'll have our first reading will be that first small section there on page 35, that paragraph on bottom right corner, and then also included in our first reading will be the left column on page 36.
If design leads, then relentless innovation is the norm. The main question remaining for VCs and old line companies alike is whether design can deliver a sustainable edge There's reason to think that it can. Unlike a few more features or marginal increases in computing speed, a better user experience can mean everything. WinPath, today's most elegantly designed social networking app, launched in November 2010, it was quirky, textured, and a little bit too complicated. The second version, released a year later, cut the core interactions down to one simple screen and had plenty of lively touches. Its present valuation, rumored to be about $250 million, has less to do with users than the user experience Path has created. A reliance on design-driven innovation poses a challenge for the companies that live by it. You can't easily patent how something looks or the feel of a user interface. Features, subtleties, and finishes spawn imitators with unprecedented speed. That means that design-led companies must innovate constantly to maintain their edge.
Okay, now we had talked about as far as the connection between engineering and design and why that's important, but this headline of this section is really fascinating. It actually could lead to more innovation.
That's right. It says if design leads, if that's the change, that engineering takes a back seat and design is now leading the product development process, well, then there's going to be an impact there. And that's the relentless innovation will become the norm.
Relentless.
It keeps going and going. There's no stopping it. And if something is the norm, that means everyone's doing it. It's very normal. And this kind of goes back to what we started on yesterday about companies having this ecosystem created that actually nurtures growth.
Mm. Do you think there's a limit to this? That there are some products out there that just, if you, even if you tried to make it an incredible design feat or achievement, that effort would be wasted?
Well, you could argue that if the environment is right at the company, then they'll be forward-thinking enough that even if that particular product dies off, they'll know what to jump onto next.
Yeah, I think there would be a limit to it. And then something new comes along to take its place. So, I think of music, right? So, of course, we had CDs. And what are you going to do with a CD? There's only so much you can do. Then we have the MP3.
But it would be kind of an interesting exercise to think of one of your – the companies that you know a lot about or maybe that you're a fan of and think, okay, you know, what would happen to them in 20 years or 50 years? How might they change and develop?
Mm. Okay. Well, that's a good question. And we start out here our reading with something called the main question.
Right. So the main question remaining for VCs, which is just a common abbreviation for venture capitalists – and old line companies alike. So for everyone involved here, the companies themselves and the people who are supporting them and investing in them, the question is, can design deliver a sustainable edge? And that's what we ended off with yesterday. Can they really make money here? Can they keep moving forward?
Yeah. And, you know, can they keep this thing going? Well, it says here, there's reason to think that it can.
Our author says, unlike a few more features or marginal increases in computing speed, a better user experience can mean everything. So we're not talking about just making your product work a little bit better. It's about rethinking its entire experience, which can mean everything, can have the utmost importance in the success of a product or service.
Okay. Now, as we turn to our next page, page 36, we read about Path.
Yes, and we've mentioned Path a couple of times in advance over the past few years, originally when it first started out, but then it kind of fizzled, as we'll see here. When it
fizzled?
Yes, it kind of
What's
died
fizzled?
Out. Sorry. So I think of like a fire sort of slowly dying.
Yeah,
okay. But it did relaunch, and we'll see that here. So when Path actually launched in November a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, it was quirky, textured, and a little bit too complicated. So quirky meaning sort of funny, unusual, a little bit different from things around it. Textured having a lot of different looks and maybe different designs to it. And just too much, too confusing.
I think you tried Path, didn't you?
I did some research on it, but I never actually signed up.
Yeah. Okay. Of course, Path was the social networking platform where you could limit the number of people that were on your network, I think the 50, right?
I believe so. So the idea was just share this part of your life with your family or your closest friends. You can pick a smaller audience than something like Facebook. So the concept is great, but the original version was kind of confusing.
Okay. Happens a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, happens a lot. People come out with something. It's great, but not quite right.
Yeah, it's a very common phrase in technology. We talk about versions. What version of software are you running? What version of this app is successful? And it turns out the second version of Path has become much more successful. It was released a year later, so 2011, and they simplified it. They cut the core interactions down to one simple screen and had plenty of lively touches. And when applications have things that are lively, it means that they're eye-catching, that they're engaging.
So that brings us back up to the very beginning of this paragraph, where they call it today's most elegantly designed social networking app. Now, usually when I think of something being elegant, I think of a lady who's very graceful and has very good manners and knows just the right thing to say. But I often use this in talking about English, actually, mm-hmm. where I'll say, oh, I think that would be a more elegant way of writing that sentence. In other words, more simple, more easy to understand, just nicer.
Okay, and it's important to say that today's most elegantly designed social networking app, they didn't say that when it first came out. When it first came out, they didn't say this is elegant.
Right, so they're showing us the contrast there. They say, now we think it's just beautiful, but originally we thought, no, this is too confusing and complicated. Mm-hmm. So as we continue there, that actually means that it's the value that people have placed on it has gone up quite a lot as well.
And we do talk about that present valuation.
That's right. It says its present valuation, which is rumored to be about $250 million, has less to do with users than the user experience they've created. So they don't have near the number of users of people who've downloaded Path, the mobile application, in comparison with Twitter or Facebook, but they are worth quite a bit of money simply based on the fact they've created an elegant user experience.
It took me a couple times to read this sentence, and I was thinking about, for instance, Facebook, because Facebook, a lot of their valuation is based upon number of users. Oh, they've got a billion users, right?
Yep.
And Path has far fewer, but their valuation isn't based on, oh, well, they've got so many users. It's based upon this is a good product.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You can kind of think of it the same way you would think of a car, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is the car that everyone buys. It's a good car. But this is the car that's valued much more because it's an amazing car.
Mm-hmm. And certain companies have achieved incredible success by being purchased by Facebook, for example, like Instagram, which is a very popular photo sharing app, simply because they've created a really unique way of doing a certain thing on the mobile phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't think anyone would call Facebook elegantly designed,
no.
right?
No.
All right. As we get into our next paragraph, we see we talk about this reliance on design-driven innovation.
Right. If you rely on something, you depend on it. So a reliance on design-driven innovation poses a challenge for the companies that live by it. If you depend on design first, that poses, just sort of means presents this challenge for you.
And part of it is explained after the colon.
It says you can't easily patent how something looks or the feel of a user interface. So the big challenge here is, can you keep your competitive advantage when something simple as elegantly designed is not something that you can patent, which means you file it with the U.S. Patent Office in this case, and no one can infringe on that patent or copy what you've done.
And this connects directly to what we were just talking about last month, right?
Is innovation – is copying innovation. Is
or
it good?
Theft.
Right. Yeah, or theft.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we see here – we continue also by saying the features and subtleties and finishes spawn imitators, right?
Okay. So, again, going back to the idea from is copying theft or innovation, the features of something are the different options you have for ways to use it, the different things it offers you. Subtleties. Think of the word subtle. It's something very minor, just a tiny little difference, but it can make quite a difference to us, right? Something like a color option. And also finishes, which is just, again, that polish, sort of mm-hmm. those last little touches.
Okay. And this spawns imitators, or this brings to life, gives birth to many imitators who will take a good website and copy it, won't even think about copying it, right?
Right. Even huge companies like Samsung, who recently was found to have been infringing on Apple's patents in many of the elegantly designed things we like about the iPhone, like mm-hmm. the swipe and the zoom.
So, and that leads to unprecedented speed that they can copy things with. Unprecedented.
Right. We've never seen it before.
Yeah. All right. And that means design-led companies must innovate constantly to maintain their edge so they can never rest.
Not at all.
All right. Let's have our final reading of this article.
Solving problems in the developing world. Design isn't being looked at as a solution to only business problems. Its practitioners are now taking up roles that used to be dominated by not-for-profits and governments, seeking new ways to raise the fortunes of the developing world. In our first Innovation by Design Awards, projects such as the Embrace Infant Warmer, a low-cost incubator, and the BioLite Camp Stove, a hyper-fuel-efficient cooking device, aim to significantly improve and even save the lives of people in poor countries with little modern infrastructure. What everything in this issue shares is a motivating ethos that Watson also hinted at during his Wharton speech, just before the quote that everyone knows. "We are convinced," he said, "that good design can materially help make a good product reach its full potential. Replace product with business. In every instance, the wisdom rings true."
Well, it's nice to read in this last section about how this design is actually moving beyond just making a profit, but actually solving problems.
I was so grateful that this article included this information because I get a little cynical. I get a little bit just fed up, actually, when it's all about the money, when mm-hmm. the whole focus is just about how can we be the most successful. Here we see that it's not only about the business world.
Right. We see that its practitioners there in line two are now doing what, Josh?
Well, they're taking up roles that used to be dominated by not-for-profits and governments, and they're seeking new ways to raise the fortunes of the developing world. And that's the phrase we used at the title of this lesson. And it just talks about nations that are still not first world, that their economies are emerging and that they're working on solving maybe problems that other countries have figured out.
Okay. And then when we see here, raise the fortunes, we're not talking about making people rich.
Right. But although maybe it would lead to that eventually. Mm-hmm. But basically we're saying make them a little bit luckier than they are now. Make them put them in a better position than they were in previously.
Mm-hmm. One of the things Fast Company does is they do sponsor different types of contests and things like that to get people to participate and come up with new ideas. So that's what writer is talking about here in the next paragraph.
Yes, in our first Innovation by Design Awards. So they held these awards to encourage people to try new ideas and to send them the things they'd been working on.
Okay, and what are a couple of the examples?
Well, the Embrace Infant Warmer. So we know that's the title of a product because it has capitals. It's a proper noun there. And it's a low-cost incubator. And an incubator is revolutionary technology that keeps premature babies and allows them to grow in a warm, closed machine called an incubator.
And then speaking of keeping things warm.
It's a little different, Bill.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying.
All right. Well, we move in a different direction to the BioLite Camp Stove, which is a hyper-fuel efficient cooking device. So the idea there being a lot of people can't afford fuel to cook their food, and so that can lead to malnutrition. Here, if they have this option of something that uses much less fuel, then mm-hmm. they can cook their food.
Okay. So these great designs, they're aiming to significantly improve and save the lives of people in poor countries that lack infrastructure. Last paragraph starts off by saying what everything in this issue shares.
It shares a motivating ethos that we then go back to our first day in the lesson that Thomas Watson Jr. hinted at during his Wharton speech, that just before the quote that everyone knows, "We are convinced," he says, "that good design can materially help make a good product reach its full potential."
Okay. Now, first off, ethos.
Yes. Well, ethos is your set of moral beliefs, your attitudes, the things that usually a group of people will have. We often talk about the collective ethos of a certain group, a certain religion, a certain country. And so it's what he believes in.
Okay. And actually, last month, one of our specialized terms, or actually vocab terms, was a precept. We also had precept last month, similar. I underlined hinted at here, Naomi.
Mm-hmm. If you hint at something, you're not really saying it directly. You're sort of implying it. You're letting people kind of come to their own conclusions about something. But you are saying something nonetheless.
Okay. I like that we have this in here as far as this quote before the quote, and it helps us with our context. Too many times you hear quotes that are out of context and we miss the meaning, right?
And this is very important. Whenever you hear something that you find a bit shocking, it's good to go and look for the source. Is this taken out of context? Mm-hmm. Does it really make sense on its own, or was the person trying to say something quite different?
Yeah. I know Josh had talked about that. I think when we had a break, you were talking about a quote that was like, part of a quote was missing.
Right. Well, it's the quote that Mr. Watson, that was attributed to him over the course of technological history, that now people have said he didn't say it just like that. That the world, that there is a lot more than five computers that will be used in the world.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got to make sure you have the full quote to understand everything. Make sure it's true. Our final sentence says...
Oh, well, replace product with business. So we're going back to this earlier part of the quote where he said, "We're convinced that good design can materially help make a good product reach its full potential. It can also make a good business reach its full potential."
In every instance,
that wisdom rings true. And that's a great phrase, just meaning that it seems to be the truth. It sounds true or rings true to me.
Okay. Well, listeners, lots of vocabulary, lots of specialized terms, lots of things here to understand. So if you have the MP3 or if you're listening on the internet, you might want to go back and listen to the program again to get it all. Whatever you do, thank you for your diligence. Thank you for being here, working so hard. We certainly appreciate it and look forward to seeing you again next time. Till then, this is Bill.
Naomi.
And Josh.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.